And I start my presentation with a picture of two famous students together, Arvo Pärt and Veljo Tormis. Veljo was a young teacher at music school and Arvo his student. In my talk, I would have two parts. One is about folk music, the opposition of official and authentic folk music, and then about Tormis, who gave his support to the most authentic and ethnographic folk music. First of all, I start with Anton Schade, who has written about dance, about choreographics and politics, then official dance, and the rise of ethnographic ensembles, and the rise of folk music movement. Those two were related, and as Veljo Tormis identified himself with ethnographic music, then Arvo Pärt found for himself a new language in early music and later defined himself with Orthodox Church. But the movement itself was much wider, and here I have brought out a program of Moscow Soloists ensemble directed by Alexei Lyubimov, performed in Tallinn for the first time Edison Denisov's Laments. And we can see that this turn towards early folklore was not something limited to Baltic republics, where many have written about it, but that was also very actual in Moscow, in Leningrad, where, from where I know authentic ethnographic examples. But first, about the official folklore. That is a very famous ensemble. Igor Kostev's dance ensemble and Anton Schade has written a very interesting book about choreographic politics. State folk dance companies, he analyzes several companies from several states. But as dance is very much related to music, everything applies also to music. And all those dance ensembles have their music roots. And Schade's first claim is that particularly totalitarian states try to use representation that is polished, that is enriched with European classical traditions. And Moiseev's ensemble is a very good example of that. I've used here from internet the picture that Anton Schade also uses in his books. I had included links, but unfortunately we don't have internet here, so we have, but it didn't work. I tried.
Mashup PPT lives in my little picture.
Well, but anyways, let's listen more to music. So, folk dance movement and also presenting folk music, songs and instrumental pieces on stage started in Estonia already in the 20s, but that was not united with the tradition of ballet or theater dance, but with gymnastics. And the first leader of dance groups, Anna Rotkatz, had studied in Finland, and folk dances were first arranged as a part of gymnastics or athletes' programs of the gymnastics festivities on the stadiums, but also on the concert stage. But changes happened very fast when Estonia became a member of the Soviet Union. Then it was first, some attempts were made to create a state folklore ensemble at the Philharmonie, State Philharmonie, but that didn't succeed. But that is an outdoor ensemble that's working really in the model of Moiseev and other dance ensembles. They even were proposed to try to reorganize as a professional ballet ensemble, but their leader refused because though they had very strong dance training in their rehearsals, but they haven't people who have graduated from ballet schools, including their leaders. So that more or less this dance is somewhere between amateur folk dance and variety show. The same certainly can be said about Moiseev's ensemble, and Anthony Shea analyzes very well how this combination works and defines their place in the culture between ballet and variety show or entertainment culture. But in 1969, the first ensemble of so-called authentic or ethnographic folk dance was created. That was Lakery. They performed at the Open Air Museum, and as you see here, that's not selected people of the one height or young and slender, but they are just simple people. They have taken children together with them. So that's they tried to create in the folk open air museum the atmosphere of a real folk party, and particularly attractive when there were buses with Finnish tourists, and they took the tourists also to their dances. And more in music, an important ensemble was the ensemble Lekarus, created by Igor Donorist in 1979. And that's precisely the time when Donis changed his style and almost exclusively went to work with folk music. And also Arvo Pärt had some years of silence and then came out with his famous Tintinnabuli music. So that it was clearly some opposition towards this over-arranged and over-polished official practice of folklore. It's quite important that in 1970, in Tallinn took place a Congress of Finno-Ugric Sciences. That's joint linguistics, literary studies, but also music session and many concerts where Tommy's works were performed. But just preparing for this conference and after this Congress, Tommy started to work with the music of Baltic Finnic peoples, and during 20 years composed a huge cycle, a cycle of six verses, and Karelian songs were composed in the 80s. I've chosen here only what was composed in other Baltic Finnic languages. But at the same time, he also composed two works using not Baltic Finnic, but quite different traditions. He composed North Russian Bolina, just using his normal composing method, and a parallel old folk song of Russian tradition. Later I tell also that was a commission. So, Bulgarian Triptych was also a commission. So, but first of all, this Gothic Finnish tradition. First, we'll listen to a short excerpt of Ingrid Winning singing and dancing, and then Pelotormi's piece. Thank you. And here are students at Tartu University.
To record, not only to perform, all
Yeah, the first, second, third, then visions beyond Estonia and visions of Kalevala. So five cities. And on this same, there are two very contrasting works. First of all, here I mentioned that Tomis always works together with Kõklaits. Vyacheslav Shurov is one of a very well-known Moscow folklorists. I think they studied at the University of Conservatoire at the same time with Tomis. But all the text and the recording for Tomis is prepared and the background arranged by Shurov. And Shurov himself founded in Moscow such a ethnographic ensemble of Russian song, performing the songs that he had himself recorded and knew well. And again, you see quite normal women here, not ballet artists. The story is about, the Bolina is about the hero Ilya Muromets and Sokolnik. And it was recorded from a Russian family in Komi Autonomic Republic in 65. And the composition is from 77. I begin from the end because all the arrangement is in old Russian that it's difficult to understand even for contemporary Russians. But in the end, there are two pages of music with just reciting. Now I'll tell you what the story was. So let's listen first. You can read, and there's the end in Estonian. And the end has to be performed in the language of the audience. So in our case, you should do it in English.
Aga nüüd me räägime niisama, kuidas see lõpu oli. Meredalt vägimees Kangis Okolnik kippus laastama pealinna Kiievit. Tema läks vastu vana Ilja Muromets ise.
it lasts 10 minutes. So we can't listen to it. But, well, from one side, that was a Russian song in the program, and the Minister of Culture didn't allow to travel without a Russian song. But that was a good solution in the between for the composition. Really, really was serious and beautiful, and not certainly a Soviet song, and not the Polish style folk song that people have been very unhappy and was quite a dramatic story. And Dormus has used one more, Bulina, later at the crossroads, but that's in the 90s. But now a few words about the People's Friendship Rhapsody. That can be called also People's Friendship Parody. But that's a commission from Dormis for the 60th anniversary of the USSR. And here, against his all principles, he has used all the most exemplary, well-known songs of different peoples. But from time to time, the Russian theme comes. And that's, Dormis himself says, that's loud and drowning all the other songs. But the last line of the composition are quiet, the Russian line doesn't appear anymore, and the last lines are, the story was just as I told you. So, leaving himself the authorship. Well, this song was once performed in Sovetai for this anniversary, and then in the 1990s and 60s, somehow when people were already had some distance with the politics, we could feel the fun in it and perform again and record it. And besides, Dormis has composed also a parody of Estonian parliament, so that's not the unique one.
Thank you.
to stress that Tomis cannot be defined only as Estonian national composer, although there's a number of his songs really supporting Estonian identity and the feeling of belonging together. But just label him that Bert is avant-gardist or minimalist and Tomis is Estonian nationalist, that would be simplifying both of them. And the crucial point for understanding his works is the opposition between official representative, be it censored, polished, superficial, spectacular, but first of all, entertaining culture and its possible alternatives. Tomis has himself said that he can't write music for entertainment. Just he can't invent it. He must have something to say. And in his case, he has been supporting both traditional cultures and searching for authentic experiences, even if the commissions come from far away. And this opposition has certainly not disappeared after the end of the Soviet Union, for nowadays all the drowning into global entertainment culture can be felt as much a danger for particularly small language and small people. And let's see what will happen. Thank you very much.